You're listening to the Rockford Symphony Orchestra podcast, where we look to inform about our upcoming events and give insight to behind-the-scenes happenings at the RSO.
This is Phil Davidson, and with me today is Rockford Symphony Orchestra music director Yaniv Attar, and we are discussing the final Masterworks concert of the season, America 250. A jubilant celebration honoring the 250th anniversary of the United States on Saturday, May 9th at 7:30 p.m. Where else but the Coronado Performing Arts Center? Great to see you again, Yaniv.
Good to see you, Phil.
So this concert showcases American music and its rich and diverse heritage. How so?
You know, usually when I come up with a program, I always try to have the pieces in the program somehow connect. But I think with this one, it's almost as if every piece has nothing to do with any of the other piece. Because I think American music, I don't think of it, for this concert especially, as one music. Like, American music is plural. There's so much in American music, so many layers. There's not just one thing that represents America. America means so many things. So for this concert, I chose two composers that are alive and well, let's say it like this, representing a different kind of American music today, and then two composers who are iconic to, and they're of course not with us anymore, but they're iconic to American music, and that's Bernstein and of course Copland. And then for the living composers, again, two completely different, one from the classical side, which is Jesse Montgomery, which I'm sure we'll talk later, and then Jeff Mitkiff, who is more of the classically trained but bluegrass roots that comes as a composer. So it's a very interesting mix of composers for the concert, which I think America is a very interesting mix of cultural diversity.
Melding pot.
Exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, the first piece in the program is by Jesse Montgomery. And I think she is not only known for her compositions, but also her violin prowess. In fact, I believe that's how she began her career, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, she before she became a famous composer, she was she's still an amazing violinist, and she for many years she played with the Sphinx Orchestra, or it's an organization that supports diversity in classical music. And I think for her, as a young Black woman in America, this was very important. And these are things that this background completely influenced her writing. She's very political in her writing. She has a piece called Banner, which I love, and it's all dealt with the national anthem. So she writes a lot about social justice, etc. But this is definitely comes from that background, and from being from within the orchestra. She understands orchestra very well, and especially strings.
Well, I read that I think she's currently working on her doctorate degree in composition at Princeton, but her compositions are celebrated for, I guess, creative type sounds. So what makes them this way?
I think her writing, it's, you know, some classical composers who have very classical, traditional kind of education tends to write in a certain way. And I think with her, there are no boundaries. Music is music, whether it's classical music, whether it's jazz, whether it's improvisation, whether it's spirituals, everything, there's just no boundaries. And she brings music from all these aspects of life and creates something so unique that has such a distinctive voice. And I think that's why she became so iconic. I mean, she's young and already talked about as the most important living composer in America.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think all those influences are like we talked about before, but the you said the melting pot. It's kind of the melting pot of her musical language, which brought her to have such unique and distinctive voice. And I think that's people can really resonate with all that, whether it's subconscious or whether they read about it and know it.
On the 9th, you will be performing A Hymn for Everyone, which I think is her newest work. I read that it is not the piece, though, that she originally intended to write.
Right. So she wrote this piece, and it was recorded with the Chicago Symphony. At that point, she was the composer in residence. I think she's even originally from Chicago. I even bumped into her at the airport in Chicago a few times. But she wrote this piece during the pandemic.
Wow.
Time that was difficult, I mean, for everybody. And clearly it was difficult for performing artists, not being able to perform. And she was saying that she had some kind of a, what do you call it in English, writer's block?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And then this hymn came to her. Like one day she was taking a walk in nature and it came to her. And the whole piece is built on that hymn. Life, the composer, it takes you in unexpected ways. you don't intend to write something, but something comes up and then you have the urge and then you build on that. And she wrote, and that's a beautiful piece.
So would you describe Hymn for Everyone for us and what we will hear?
Yeah, it's very interesting. The way the piece starts, it's almost that the listener is part of the process of the hymns coming to you. It's not a real hymn. I mean, it's not something that you would hear in a church or anywhere else. It's totally original. But, you hear fragments of it as if you're composing it yourself, and then you start, singing it. And then more and more instruments join this this very peaceful, I would say, hymn that you hear. It's a very... the piece is not virtuosic or fast. It's very meditative piece, I would call it. I think she even called it unofficially meditation for orchestra.
Oh.
You can imagine, being during COVID and that difficult time that we all went through. And so it builds on that beautiful hymn, and it develops with the orchestra beautifully. And then there's almost like a second part of the hymn, which comes on the second part of the piece. And then what she does at the end, and she loves doing that, is combining both of those. They're played simultaneously and create something very grand.
Wow.
Yeah.
Looking forward to hearing that.
Yes, it's a really wonderful piece. I'm looking forward to performing her music here.
Well, then we move on and to Leonard Bernstein, who I think we all know, his Symphony Number 1 called Jeremiah. Bernstein was a particularly versatile composer. Could you run through all the genres that he composed for? I mean, I can mention a few of them, but why don't you? Would you talk about that a little bit?
Bernstein is definitely one of the most incredible figures in music that we know, not because of just his being so versatile in his compositions, but that man can do anything. I mean, he was the conductor of the New York Philharmonic.
Right.
He was the figure that changed the way people approach orchestra and how we educated generations of young people with his very famous Young People's Concerts that were broadcast everywhere. I think he's one of the maybe the first conductor. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but at least from my knowledge, one of the very first conductors to speak from the stage to the audience and make that connection. I mean, even today, not all conductors do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it really breaks the boundaries. And, he would tell the orchestra, the audience about what they're about to hear. And I think audience crave for that connection. So in that in that sense, to me, is like one of my heroes. In terms of his composition, I think there is no composer that I can think of that was so versatile to write, you know, music for Broadway, music for ballet, music that is religious and sacred, classical. And of course, everybody associated him with West Side Story.
Right.
Which is funny because when he talks about his symphonies, this was one of his fears as a composer. He did not want to be remembered just for West Side Story. You know, he always said, I wrote serious music too. And he wrote three symphonies, which are fantastic. I think, you know, we could play the symphonic dances from West Side Story in this, and that would still be American. But I wanted to bring the serious, so to speak, side of him and how he wanted to be remembered as a composer.
So, well, I think you've partially answered this already, but why did you choose this particular piece, and what's the story behind it, or in it?
So he wrote this piece when he was quite young, 24 or 25. I think he wrote it for a competition that mm-hmm. he did not win. But later, I think he got an audience prize, and people saw the incredible talent that he had as a composer. And, I mean, this tells the story of the prophet Jeremiah. There's a biblical story of it. In the story of Jeremiah, you know, Jeremiah warns people about how they, you know, stray away from their values, mm-hmm. etc. And I think America is still searching for answers, even after 250 years, of where we are and what our values are, etc. So I thought it's a very fitting
very
kind of topic. Great time to have that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even though Bernstein, like you talked about, is so versatile, music for Broadway, music for film, music for serious music, there is still very distinct Bernstein sound to it. When you hear Bernstein, no matter what type of music mm-hmm. he writes to, there's still, that's Bernstein,
yeah.
Which I think is great. So it's almost like you don't reinvent yourself too many times. You still hear the Bernstein in it.
Right, right. If you didn't know what it was, you'd know it was his.
Right. There's no mistaking. Yes.
He's very much like John Williams in movie music.
Right, but when you hear some of his serious music, you can still hear, okay, that's John Williams, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Exactly.
Well, I think you've already answered my question about what we're going to experience in its three movements, unless you want to elaborate on that.
Yeah, no, there's the three movements. One is Prophecy, which is very dramatic and searching kind of movement. Profanation, which is crazy, crazy rhythmic. It's actually in a lot of conducting auditions because every bar basically is in a different meter. It's like he was very inspired at this age by Stravinsky. So the music is, you know, chaotic and mm-hmm. very rhythmically driven. And then in the last movement, we joined by mezzo-soprano Leah Dexter, who is going to sing texts from, Jeremiah, Book of Lamentation, sung in Hebrew. You know, Bernstein had a faith crisis throughout his life. You know, what did it mean to be a Jew in America and et cetera? And I think the story also relates to him, I think, personally in this. It's a magnificent symphony that very rarely played. So I'm excited to bring it to life here in Rockford.
I'll be excited to listen to it.
Yeah.
Well, then the next selection is kind of different from Bernstein.
Yep. Could be more different.
Is the Mandolin Concerto from the Blue Ridge by Jeff Midkiff. And he's been described, well, he is a composer, a mandolinist, and a clarinetist.
Yep.
So he's versatile. I'm not totally familiar with him, so would you tell us more about him?
Okay, so this is the funny story about him. And I did not know it until after I booked him. I read somewhere that he played clarinet, but I didn't realize that that was his main instrument. It's not the mandolin. It was the clarinet. And believe it or not, Jeff Midkiff, for a good number of years, was a clarinetist in the Rockford Symphony.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. Totally. And I asked, actually, one of our musicians, it was Mark Baldwin, who plays trumpet,
yes,
who has probably been the longest here at the orchestra. And I said, do you know him? And he said a funny story about him. He was telling me one time after a concert, they were, he played clarinet in the orchestra. They were in some club or something, and people were jamming and improvising, and he only knew Jeff as a clarinetist. And he said Jeff just took out mandolin and started playing. He said it was insanely good. He had no idea. It's so funny that this world, small world connection.
Yeah.
I booked him because he contacted me. Sent me a recording of the piece that they played, this concerto in Tanglewood with the Boston Symphony. And he said, would you be interested in programming it? And I listened to it and fell in love with it. It's such a great piece. And only after I said, he said, oh, you in Rockford? I used to play there in the orchestra at the Coronado. And he knew so many of the musicians. So very, very small world.
Well, and he has a local tie as far as education, too, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think he went to Northern Illinois University in clarinet. So I think a lot of his mandolin playing is almost self-taught in a way.
Wow.
And he's such a virtuosic and pushes the boundaries, both with his compositions and with his playing. It's a real treat. And, it's an instrument you rarely hear with an orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
So I can identify it because, I've programmed guitar concertos here a few times, which also you don't hear very often. But I think mandolin is even more rare.
Right, right. Well, describe this piece for us.
It's very much like Jesse Montgomery. What Jeff is doing is bringing his classical training, his experience as an orchestral playing. I asked him actually once, what did he like playing most? And he said Gustav Mahler. He loved playing the Mahler symphonies. So he has all this classical training and then bringing his love for bluegrass and the mandolin together. And there's a lot of bluegrass influences, a lot of fiddling that you hear,
mm-hmm.
Lots of jazz influences, especially in the third movement. One of the things, for example, that you have in a concerto is the cadenza, which is usually the soloist, playing just by themselves, something virtuosic to show off, right? This is a big part of every concerto. So what he did in the cadenza, in the third movement, so it starts with a solo mandolin and then the solo violin, so the concertmaster, joining as if they're jamming, and then the percussion, and then there's a double bass is joining, and then the percussion, the drums are joining, and it sounds like four musicians from different section in the orchestra all scattered around, and they're like just started like a 3-minute jam. It's so much fun.
Wow.
It's a real, I played it once with him before and people went crazy. It was so cool.
Well, and then I was going to ask you who the special soloist is, but I think you've already hinted at that pretty well.
As far as I know, he is the only one who played this piece. Not that he would mind other people playing it, but it's very hard to find mandolin players
uh-huh.
who would be so interested in playing with orchestra and playing contemporary music, etc. So of course, as a piece that he composed, he's the big champion for that piece. But it's always interesting to, whenever I play a piece, I rarely have the chance to ask the composer, is that what you meant? Do you want to do this way? And Jeff is very particular about how you want things to be heard.
So, terrific.
Yeah.
So it'll be like old home week for him.
Yes.
This is a good point to say, I think we have another soloist for this performance, do we not? Not for this particular piece, but...
Right, so that would be the soprano, mezzo-soprano, Leah Dexter, who sings in the last movement of the Bernstein Symphony. So those are the two soloists that will be featured in this concert.
This is great.
Actually, we have another soloist that, not mentioning, I wouldn't call them soloists, but for two of the pieces, the Jesse Montgomery, Hymn for Everyone, and for the Copeland, which will close the concert, which I guess maybe it's a good bridge for us to mention the last piece. The Rockford Dance Company, I asked them to choreograph dances for those two pieces that will start and end the concert.
That's great.
Which I think is a wonderful way, as we celebrate the 50th of America, to have this kind of local partnership and collaboration for the season finale.
Oh, boy, that's exciting.
Yeah.
Well, yes, as you mentioned, the final piece on the program is two dance episodes from Rodeo by Aaron Copland. So after all this wide-ranging program, why did you choose to end with two dance episodes from Rodeo?
I think it was inevitable that we will have to finish with Copland. If you ask any musician what composer is identified most with American music, and on top of it to say which piece by that composer, I can guarantee you that 99.9% of people will say Aaron Copland, and the piece would be Appalachian Spring, which I probably would have programmed, but it was done recently with the Rockford Symphony, so I wanted to pick something else. And so I picked the two dance episode from this ballet, which I think also that type of music connects very well to the concerto that we're going to hear before with the bluegrass and that kind of roots. So in essence, the first half of the piece of the concert is a living composer and a dead composer with the serious type of music. And then the second half, a living composer and a composer that is not living anymore, but with a lighter and earthly kind of connection to American music.
The Hoedown is one of the most recognizable pieces in American music. So what is it about Copland's writing that makes it feel so instantly and unmistakably American?
I think the way he managed to capture American folk dance and dance traditions very well and bring it into the orchestra. I mean, there's many places, especially for the string, when it really sounds like fiddling with all the open strings and open intervals. And I think he managed to do it so well, and that's why especially the Hoedown is so iconic. I mean, you hear it everywhere, and I think it's something that people resonate really quickly and naturally as something that is American music to them. You know, the folk tradition and fiddling, and I think it's very exciting.
Yeah. It is exciting. This program is amazing. Come celebrate the 250th anniversary of the United States with the Rockford Symphony Orchestra on Saturday, May 9th, 7:30 p.m. at the Coronado Performing Arts Center. And for more information about the concert, tickets, and more, go to rockfordsymphony.com or call 815-965-0049. This is Phil Davidson.
And I'm Yaniv Attar.
Thank you for listening.